the hell are you?
Destiny. Read my palm. Rule number one. Never, ever use these dime store briefcases. It's bad form.
I want a lawyer.
Look, if you come clean right now, you might not need one. Who's your date?
Name's Carlo Amati.
Can't be. How the hell did you hook up with Amati?
He got to me through some bullfighter named Izzy Moreno.
Rule number two. Try not to get any stupider between now and when he sits
down. You, Mr. Pink? You Amati?
That's right.
This is for my brother.
Amati's still breathing.
This one's gone. Freeze! Miami Vice!
This is the Vice of Miami podcast, where your hosts Mark and Tim review the iconic TV show Miami Vice. Set against the backdrop of Miami's vibrant nightlife and drug trade, Miami Vice followed detectives Sonny Crockett and Ricardo Tubbs and the entire OCB team as they battled the scourge of the mid and late 80s. With its unforgettable character, stylish fashion, and epic soundtrack, Miami Vice captured the spirit of the times and left a lasting impact on popular culture. Join us as we dive deep into the world of Miami Vice and explore the show's enduring legacy.
And that brings us to welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show number 52. Tim and I are always glad that you join us. We hope you enjoyed the last show covering Kill Shot. So again, as always, sit back, relax, grab a beverage. I've got another sun tea here. And enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering season 3, episode 4, Walk Alone.
This episode was written by W.K. Scott Meyer, directed by David Jackson. Its original air date was October 17th, 1986, and it is the 48th episode overall in this series. Our plot summary is that Tubbs goes undercover in a penitentiary to try and smoke out a group of corrupt prison guards.
All right, let's check out the guest stars and co-stars for this episode. First up, we have Kevin Conway, who appeared as Bolton Prison Watch Commander Fox. Born May 9th, 1942 in New York City, Kevin got a start playing in the 1971 TV movie Hogan's Goat. His other appearances include One Life to Live, the miniseries The Scarlet Letter, The Equalizer, Star Trek The Next Generation, to name a few shows. His movie career began with 1971's Believe in Me, followed by appearances in Seamus, Homeboy, Jennifer 8, and I do believe he was also the crazy mailman in the movie Funny Farm with Chevy Chase. Conway married Mila Burnett in 1966, but later divorced. Conway later died of a heart attack in Manhattan, New York, on February 5th, 2020, at the age of 77.
And our next guest star, Mark, is Ronald N. Perlman as Commissioner of Prisons John Rugar. Ron was born April 13th, 1950, in New York City. Perlman graduated from the University of Minnesota with a master's in fine arts in 1973, then made his TV debut in a soap opera, Ryan's Hope, followed by The Fall Guy before his first series with Linda Hamilton in the cult classic Beauty and the Beast. Becoming a voice actor, he had roles in Mortal Kombat, The Tick, Teen Titans, Justice League, just to name a few. His movie debut was in 1981's Quest for Fire, then he went on to Prince Valiant, Star Trek Nemesis, and his most recent movie, Asher. Perlman married his wife Opal in 1981, and they have two children. He is not related to Rhea Perlman of Cheers fame.
Next up, we have Frank Cassini making his acting debut as Ralph Pink. The only thing we could really find about him is some select filmography, such as Knots Landing, The Commish, NYPD Blue, Vice, not Miami Vice, and Blackstone.
Next is Michael Earl Reed as Carl, the former inmate of Bolton Prison. We only have a select filmography that can be found on Mike, which included Alone in the Dark, Two Over Easy, Nash Bridges with Don Johnson, Careless, Two Broke Girls, and Godless, to name some of his credits.
Next up is Lawrence John Fishburne III as Keller, a prison guard. Born July 30th, 1961 in Augusta, Georgia, Fishburne began his career at the age of 12 on the soap opera One Life to Live. He then appeared in TV shows Trapper John M.D., MASH, Pee-wee's Playhouse, before appearing in the TV movies The Tuskegee Airmen, Mrs. Ever's Boys, and Fishburne married actress Hanya O. Moss in 1985 until their divorce in the 1990s, and they have two children. Fishburne then married actress Gina Torres in 2002 until their 2018 divorce, and they have one daughter.
And last but not least, we have Martin Ferrer returning briefly as Izzy the Stripper.
And rounding out our co-stars, we've got Richard St. George as Lazarus, Jim Kick as Short Con, A.H. Dewey as Hammer, Lawrence Kennedy as His Horror, John Corker as Samson, Dalton Cathay as Ruzick, W. Paul Bodie as Tough Guy, and unknown credit as Laura.
And now we have some recent Miami Vice in the news. On June 5th, 2023, Animation World Network reported that Oscar-nominated actor Edward James Olmos will voice bad guy villain Molecule Man in the next season of the Marvel comic-inspired anime series Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Olmos's Molecule Man will face off with The Beyonder, which is voiced by none other than Lawrence Fishburne, who is prison guard Keller in Walk Alone. No season 2 release date was given.
Okay, let's start off the discussion for Walk Alone. We open up to none other than a love scene, a really hot love scene with Tubbs, with the new main squeeze named Laura. Don't really know where they were at, maybe his place or her place. It wasn't really specifically given, but thank God it was a short scene here. We don't need any more long love scenes. And we quickly shift to OCB, where we see Tubbs happy as a clam with a concerned Switek looking on. Switek tells Crockett that he's the man to give Tubbs advice on relationships before getting his ring finger involved. Little comedic relief there. And then Zito returns in this episode. I think he comes in and drops some papers or something like that, or something to Switek. But anyway, Tubbs gets a call from Laura, who tells him that there's a guy at her work who said something about a couple of keys. Tubbs informs her that he's going to be right over there. And then Crockett walks in and tells Tubbs that they got to go, that they are the main show in a deposition at Metro. Back to work, people. Tubbs tells him that they're going to take a quick detour along the way to go check out what Laura is bringing up. So there we go, Tim.
And then we learn that Laura works as waitstaff in a club. She points out a potential dealer to Crockett and Tubbs. They approach, sit down, and bust this guy just as a couple of keys of coke fall out of his cheap dime store briefcase. This skill, later ID'd as Mr. Pink, tells Crockett and Tubbs he works for Carlo Amati. And Tubbs says no way is a rank amateur connected with a major player like Amati. He tells them that this meet and greet was facilitated by a guy named Izzy. Amati arrives and asks the lightweight if he is Pink. And when Pink affirms, Amati pulls a gun and says, "This one is for my brother," and shoots Pink, who returns fire and kills the henchman of Amati. When the smoke clears, we learn that Amati was shot but still alive, but Tubbs' main squeeze, Laura, had also been killed. Castillo then arrives for a briefing by Crockett and Tubbs. They give him the rundown on how Izzy brokered the intro between Pink and Amati. Crockett and Marty then have a side discussion about how Tubbs was doing. However, Tubbs seemed business as usual and reports that the amateur was named Ralph Pink, who was a guard at Bolton State Prison.
And I'm thinking that this guy Pink, he reminds me of Milton from Office Space. Give me Stiepler. Gonna burn the place to the ground. So anyway, we move on here to Raul's strip club. Zito and Switek now pay a visit to see Izzy to see what's up with what he knows and what information he has. And Izzy here, he's performing as a male stripper. Not doing a good job at it. They want to see what he knows about Amadi. Izzy tells them that they misunderstood about Pink, as Amadi approached Izzy as he wanted to meet Pink, not the other way around. Izzy relates that Amadi had another brother in prison and wanted Pink to cut him some slack by adjusting the climate control, so to speak. Assuming on drugs here. Zito and Switek pretty much exit stage left as Izzy is continuing to wow the ladies here. And we use that to him very lightly.
Very lightly.
Stick this in your boxers. Carlo Amadi almost fed our pals a pistol. Had a meeting with a dealer. Used your name as a reference.
Hey man, it's a deformation of character.
How did you manage to set up this low-rent prison car with Carlo Amadi?
Did you have misconcepted the situation? Amadi came to me. I merely communicated his desires to meet that Pink dude.
Why did Amadi want to meet with Pink?
Amadi's brother, Gio Gomez, in both prison. Amadi wanted Pink to cut him a little slack. You know, adjust the climate control in his cell.
You misconcepted the situation. Love that.
Izzy.
Now we're back at OCD, and Crockett walks in the fine Tubbs combing through paperwork. Zito tells him that he thinks Tubbs slept there all night. Again, Tubbs seems just business as usual. He tells Crockett that Amadi's brother was a mid-level dealer who was killed in Bolton along with 10 other dealers in just that year alone. No investigative reports were done, with the only witnesses being the guards and other prisoners. Crockett remarks that coke can be the driver for such deaths. He then counsels Tubbs and tells him, why don't you take a couple days off just to deal with Laura's death? He says that he would do the late work and loop Tubbs in if something pops. Then Zito enters and tells Crockett and Tubbs that Marty wants them at Mercy Hospital. Crockett asks about Amadi, and Zito says, you know, he's been better.
Listen, why don't you take a couple of days off, buddy, and deal with what's happened? That's understandable. I'll follow up on all this, and if anything pops, you know I'm going to call you in on it.
Meanwhile, at Mercy Hospital, Marty restricts access to Amadi's room. Tubbs tells him that there's a major problem at Bolton going down. Marty introduces Crockett and Tubbs to the prison commissioner, John Ruger, who tells them that the guards there are leaning on the prisoners for dope and are iced off if they do not play ball here. Little dirty game going on in the jail or in the prison. He gained this info from Amadi via his brother. So there we go. The drugs are brought in by family members or conjugal visits. Pink then in turn sold the dope on the outside. However, Ruger tells them that they have no substantial evidence on this. So
right, and that becomes a problem.
Right. It's mucking up his plans.
Right. Or everybody's turning a blind. Everybody's right. Turning a blind eye. But as we will learn in a little bit here what the real story is. So anyway, Ruger then tells them that the warden has not been questioned, as they don't know how far up the chain this is involved. What they do know is that every prisoner was killed in D block after being sent there by Watch Commander Fox. So Castillo tells Crockett and Tubbs that they need an undercover to go into Bolton. Ruger tells them that they have a list of rookies without any real face time on the streets. And Tubbs asks, why send in a rookie when you can send in a coach?
Put me in coach. I'm ready to play.
So anyway, Tubbs then volunteers, as he has been in Miami for only a couple of years, and he hasn't sent anybody to Bolton, unlike Crockett, who has. But Crockett is worried he's not thinking straight because of Laura's death. Ruger tells them, should Tubbs agree to do this, he could build him an airtight cover that will guarantee a trip to D block.
Right. Well, Tubbs is pretty spot on as far as, yeah, I haven't sent anybody there, so I really shouldn't be known unless somebody got transferred that they didn't know about. But he was got that right.
Mm-hmm. So he's right.
So back at OCB here, Tubbs proclaims that he's the right man for the job. And then despite Crockett's protests, that Tubbs hasn't processed Laura's death, Marty gives Tubbs 2 days to crack the case or he's out of there. Get in 2 days and you're out. Crockett says he can be dead in 2 days. Marty says that Zito and Switek are going to get the layout of the operations and pretty much get a plan going. And then Tubbs says it will be a piece of cake, and then he leaves. And then in a classic moment here, I noticed this as well, Tim. Crockett and Marty do a mutual stare down. They know
priceless, Mark, priceless. That's all I'm saying. That was priceless.
They know it's deep. I mean, they know
they know it's deep.
Sending Tubbs in to be offed.
And it gets deeper, as we'll see. So anyway, Zito and Swatha pay a visit to an ex-Bolton con named Carl, who appears to be working in a library. He's shelving books, so we really don't know where they're at. It could have been his basement library. Who knows? But they wanted to get the rundown on the Bolton op. So Carl relates that basically the guards stay out of gang business. Aryans take care of the whites, the Muslim Brotherhood, the blacks, and the Boitas, the Cubans. And I believe he says, and God help you if you're Puerto Rican. We learn that Carl's buddy Samson, who runs the Muslim Brotherhood, is pulling a dime in Bolton and has his first parole hearing in about 4 years. Switek says that they can probably get it moved up to 1 or 2 years if he looks after a prisoner for them. And Carl says they must have a heavy reason for this, that they would cut a couple of years off of somebody's parole hearing. He does warn them about Hammer, who is the leader of the Aryans, who runs D-Block and has a treaty with the guards. He runs drugs through Bolton, and the guards get a cut of the action. Carl states he owes Samson for protecting him after Carl taught him how to read. He says Samson can stand against Hammer's crew even from his cell. Samson writes Carl twice a week about the comings and goings inside of Bolton, and everything that Tubbs will need to know is in the letters. Carl offers to connect Tubbs with Samson as long as they can get Samson the best deal possible. And again, Switek said, we'll do what we can.
Right. And this is where it's really kind of, I don't want to say it's confusing, but all these names and all these different factions, which I'm sure it happens, but you know, this guy's that guy and you want to be buddies with this guy, but this guy's going to help you. And it's like, oh, geez, Louise.
It was just a way to keep Tubbs alive.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, Tubbs in the plot to get into prison, and I've got my thoughts about this afterwards, but let me get through this. Tubbs runs a toll booth on the Miami Highway going to Key Biscayne, and then he's chased by Highway Patrol, busted, and then that punches his ticket straight to Bolton. Ruger created his cover as Cubera, a drug dealer. And this is where, leading into this next thing here, okay, you blow a toll booth, you get pulled over. Does that mean you're going to prison right away? I mean, even if you're a drug dealer, Tim, I mean...
It was left unsaid and...
Right. Yes, it was.
I want to say that Bolton is, that's a maximum security prison. It's not
jail.
It's not like Cook County Jail where you're still waiting trial.
Right.
But the cover that he had to do, it had to be something that Cubera was out on wants or warrants or something. Right. Or here's the thing. If he does something, you know, maybe he violated parole. We really don't know, but I agree
right.
with
they
you.
They left that open.
Right. They left it open. But running a toll booth is not going to get you to prison. So whatever cover they created, they just didn't go into that.
Right. So into that, we next find Tubbs on a prison bus, I should say, to Bolton Prison itself. Now he's wearing the same clothes and all that. So that's where it's like, okay, you run a toll booth and right away you're going to prison in the same clothes. And talk about speedy justice. Woo. We need that nowadays. So anyway, a guard, when the bus gets to the prison, a guard boards and he's looking for Cubera. Tubbs identifies himself as who the guard's looking for. And then this guard jumps off the bus, makes a call and tells somebody, don't know who it is yet, that they got one, meaning a drug dealer.
Right. And just another thought on that, this cover stuff, he created an airtight cover that was going to guarantee him a trip to jail. He could have been flagged as you get this guy and he goes, no questions asked. So who knows? Yep. Note to self, stay the straight and narrow, people, so you don't have to be in Cubera's position there. So now, as the cons are processing, Cubera is stopped by a guard named Keller, played by Lawrence Fishburne, who taunts him. While in waiting, Commander Fox enters and pulls Tubbs and three others into D Block. They're given their cell assignments and Cubera is sent to cell number 23. From an elevated deck, the Aryans are already scoping Tubbs out. And before we know it, Tubbs is mixing up with one of the Aryans under the watchful eye of Hammer as the guards turn a blind eye. I mean, and you, Mark, if you remember, they just turned their heads. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it was so obvious what was going on. Samson shows up, confronts Hammer, and asks him if he wants to mix it up with the Muslim Brotherhoods. The guards then intervene to break things up, and Kubera is put on kitchen detail.
Ooh, peeling potatoes. Yeah, the guards mm-hmm. are just like, the guards are like, how's the weather?
Yep.
I know enough. They were like,
I know nothing, Schultz.
Nothing. So anyway, while on his kitchen detail, Hammer and the Aryans put the beat down on Tubbs. He's warned to watch his back in the yard. And then Keller enters and shoos the guys away. And then he steps on Tubbs, pretty much pinning him down, tell him that he's nothing but an insect. He tells Tubbs that Samson is no good because they own his number two man. Goes on to tell Tubbs that if he wants to live, bring the guards two keys of his own coke because they know that he's good for it. So they got the story rolling here. Pretty good story. So Kubera retorts that he can make them billionaires in a couple of months. Otherwise, he could put a contract out on the guards and their families. Pretty ballsy. Tubbs refuses to do business unless he deals with the ringleader personally. And he says he does not give anything away, but he will do business, though. Big words.
So now I'm, yeah, and it's funny, when you get to the next segment, I got a comment. Next morning, a guard announces that prisoners are needed for a police lineup. And meanwhile, another prisoner approaches Tubbs and says his life is in danger and he will be Tubbs' slave if he advances him one key of coke. Tubbs rebuffs the offer and walks away. He then enters his cell to find a comb on the floor. Hammer shows up right behind him and says, it's mine. What are you doing with it? Just as a way to mix it up. And then he gives Tubbs a warning to watch his back while he's in the yard.
Man, this is where things change a little bit. We're in Fox's office here, and then Keller is telling Fox how Kubera will make them millionaires.
Yes. I loved how he's putting a shaft and he's going to skim off the top from his boss, going to a millionaire from a billionaire.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
I wonder if that was just lack of script continuity. Because
it could have been
pretty ballsy to say, billions to millions, kind of wanting to screw out Fox. But
Fox doesn't know what that conversation was between Kubera and Keller. Right. I just loved it. That's all.
Could have went either way there. So anyway, Keller says he's going to do business, but only if he could meet with Fox.
What about Kubera?
Said he'd make us millionaires if we worked with him. But he won't give us anything. He wanted to talk to you.
And you said what?
Nothing. He's a problem. I set him up with the hammer.
Meanwhile, in the yard, quote-unquote slave prisoner fills in Tubbs on who's who of Bolton. Hammer and Samson are about to mix it up when Samson is shot dead by the tower guard. Another Muslim Brotherhood guy states that it was the will of Allah. A masked Keller approaches Tubbs and says the boss wants to see him. So back at Fox's office here, Fox tells Tubbs that he runs D-Block. Tubbs says that he could line it up with a standard distributor. And he also goes on to tell Fox that while he may be the big man in here, but amateurs are running this stuff on the street, in reference to Pink. Tubbs offers 40% of his profits for protection. Fox counters he wants 60. Tubbs is like, I don't think so. How about 50 plus amenities? So Fox is kind of falling for it here. He wants to meet with the distributor, only one of them, and Tubbs has to give a name. Fox goes on to tell Tubbs that to give the distributor his name as the point of contact. And Fox tells Tubbs, set up a two-key deal as a trial run. And I'm thinking two keys must be a standard thing because that's what throughout all these episodes so far, two keys.
Two must keys, like a sample. And what do they always say? It's a low-level deal. This was a low-level nut two-key deal. And then it turned into bigger deals and stuff like that. So it was, it is standard. It seems like it.
Sample size. Tubbs says in return, he wants protection, his own clothes, food, and conjugal visits. Fox agrees and says he will get Hammer off of his back.
So now we are at OCB and Switek answers a call from Tubbs pretending to be from the law offices of McMullen. Tubbs, aka Kubera, instructs his lawyer to have his wife Charmaine bring a photo of Burnett, the distributor, along with his amenities and lobster. And this conversation took place as Fox and Keller were listening in. hang up, Marty tells Switek to get the two keys from property as well as the photo of Crockett.
So now we're back at the prison. Keller leads Tubbs to a cell in administrative segregation where they put those that don't play well with others. Kind of like the cooler in Hogan's Heroes. Put them in 30 days in the cooler. These cons are called walk-alones. When he opens a cell door, Tubbs sees the slave con dancing at the end of a rope, just hanging and swinging there, which was a warning to Tubbs not to screw with Fox. Zito, Switek, and Trudy arrive at the front gate for quote-unquote Charmaine's visit. Mrs. Kubera is led to the conjugal area for a 30-minute visit. Fox opens the door, takes her purse, and has Keller search it. During the visit, they wanted to make it seem real, so it looks like they're going to go in for a makeout session here, but then Tubbs starts a fight with Trudy, accusing her of messing around on him. Fox breaks it up, and pretty much that was that. And I believe we heard Tubbs say something like, "Woman!" instead of "chomp."
Yep. So now, meanwhile, as Tubbs and Trudy were fighting, Zito and Switek were watching the outside to see a body bag being carted away. They also see Keller leaving as Fox sent him to do the meetup with Burnett. Trudy returns to the front gate, and Switek was up next to bring Tubbs his amenities, his lobster and everything. But suddenly, Carl shows up to read Switek the riot act for Samson's death. He's basically, "You double-crossed me. I did this for you, and you didn't keep him safe." He spouts off to the guards that Switek is cop, and Switek says, "Don't know who you are. You got me mistaken with somebody else." And tells Carl, "You know, hey, you're wrong, man." So Switek and Trudy walk away. Switek then tells Zito as they're taken off that they were made. And that really brings this tension to light in this episode. Now it's getting even more critical about what's about to go on inside.
Yeah, but the odd thing I thought was, how did Carl know he's going to be there? How did Carl know Switek was going to be there?
I don't know. Yeah, you know, it's one of them unexplained things. Exactly. How did he know? Yeah. You're right. I didn't think about that, Mark. Good question.
Oh, well. So now we're at Marina here. I think it was a restaurant or something like that. So anyway, Crockett is preparing to meet with Keller when Gina announces that Switek was made at the prison, which increases the tension here and the urgency of the operation. So they got to really, you know, tighten the knots on this thing and get moving. Crockett asks Marty about Tubbs. Meanwhile, at administrative segregation, Fox enters Tubbs' cell here and IDs him as a cop. He's a cop. Eh. And then back at the marina, it's a quick montage here, bits and bits. Back at the marina, Ruger tells everyone that Tubbs will be taken to the yard at 3, and this is where they're going to make their play. And then another scene switch to Tubbs getting a beat down in Fox's office here. And at the same time, Keller arrives at the marina, and Marty gives the order to bust him as a way to get the Tubbs. Back to the beat down in Fox's office. Again, this is a montage going on.
Back and forth, yep.
Yep. And now at the marina again, Crockett wants to go in to get Tubbs out of there, and Marty says no, he's going in. He tells Crockett to take Trudy and coordinate some backup at Bolton. And at the office, Fox orders Tubbs to be taken out to the yard and take care of.
"That guard that made stand at the checkpoint can monitor all incoming traffic.
So a quick strike's impossible. They'll kill Tubbs the second they see us."
"Marty, let me go in.
Too many inmates know you. I'm going. Take Trudy. Coordinate the backup in the surveillance van."
So still at the marina here, Keller makes the call to Fox, which is pretty much under duress, and says the deal's not going down because he found out there was too much heat. Fox retorts that told him that Kubera is a cop and he's going to get iced in the yard. Keller tells him to wait till he gets back. He didn't want to arrive with two keys and then have a dead cop inside, which is logical, I guess you could say. Fox tells him it's going down at 3. Things are really rolling here. It's, you know, like I said, with this montage, but everything was going so fast.
The crescendo is building.
Yeah, it's go time.
And as Ruger tells Marty he has to go through the yard to get the Tubbs, Marty stows away in Keller's car. Once inside, Keller's leading Marty as a prisoner, and then he does a double cross. He enters and locks into one room, locks him out. Marty tells the rest of the team to move in, as he gains access to the cafeteria with a single bolt gunshot through the door lock. Always love this about Hollywood. Meanwhile, Tubbs and other cons are led to the yard by Fox. Marty then opens up a 20-pound propane tank and drags it to the door that accesses the yard. In the yard, a guard throws down a shank, saying it's Tubbs, as the tower guard draws down and trains his rifle on Tubbs. Marty blows a tank with a single gunshot to create a diversion. Mark, I don't know about you, but I think a blevy would have happened here, and that tank would have done some real damage. It would have launched, and I even think Marty would have got hit. He would have got hit by shrapnel, there's no doubt.
Right. I mean, this door just kind of puffed open, and there was, I think it was just like a little flame. But yeah, blevy is more of, you know, under fire, you know.
Right. The tank is heating up, that vapor, the liquid's boiling, and it's that vapor that... It keeps expanding till it's got nowhere to go, but would have been a blevy type. Tubbs then mixes it up with the guard and uses him as a human shield. Metro moves in for the final assault as Marty takes out the tower guard. However, he is shot and wounded by another guard. Marty is still able to dust him, and then he begins to lead Tubbs out through the wall of cons. Keller grabs a rifle out of that room that he was in, and as he enters the yard, Tubbs and Marty nab him. Mark, finish this up.
But did you see when Keller was aiming it, the rifle, at Castillo, and then Tubbs comes around the corner? Did you see the split screen where it's like he's not there, and then all of a sudden Tubbs is kind of jumping on him?
No, I didn't. I have to go back.
Oh, you got to go back. Anyway, it's funny. You gotta watch it. You'll laugh. So anyway, Fox is pretty much beaten and getting killed by the Muslim Brotherhoods here. And then the stomp down here is broken up by OCB and Metro, who's rushing in. Tubbs tells Zito to let everyone know that he and Marty are okay. And then Tubbs sees a dead Fox and remarks, "At least they got a jury of their peers." And then we end up with a freeze frame here with a classic Castillo stare down.
Like,
back off! Back off! Back off! Hit it! Hit the ground!
Tell everyone we're okay. At least they got a jury of their own peers.
Okay, let's check out the ratings for this. IMDb gives us a very high 8.3, highest this season so far. Tim, what do you think?
And Mark, this was another strong showing for Dick Wolf. Not sure if this was a rip from the headlines, but nevertheless, it was great. The idea of Tubbs going undercover as a con was tense enough, but that tension increased when Carl showed up at the gate and blew the cover of Switek and Tubbs. And then time became of essence as the clock quickly struck towards 3 and the race was on to rescue Tubbs. The Castillo and Crockett mutual stare down was awesome, along with Marty moving through the prison in a Bushido-like style. Remember that from Bushido? We did that calculated slow move through the prison. I don't know. I was laughing at that. This episode was capped off by a classic Castillo stare in the freeze frame. All around awesome. And good to see that Zito was back in the mix.
Yep, I like this. Another great episode of Vice. I definitely agree with the 8.3 rating. Great storyline, great actors pulling it through. I somehow thought that Commissioner Ruger would have been tied in with the crooked staff at the prison initially, but I was wrong. He was a good guy. I was kind of confused. Not, I don't want to say confused, but why didn't they just get more of the prison administration involved in this and just come down and say, "You're not coming back here to work today," type of thing? You wouldn't have Miami Vice if that happened. So anyways.
Yeah, it wouldn't have had a storyline.
Yeah, exactly. No storyline. I also liked how Crockett tried to dissuade Tubbs from going in and telling him to take a few days off after his hottie was gunned down. True partnership for sure. I also liked as well that Castillo's decided to go in and get Tubbs. True leadership, as he let Tubbs go in there in the first place. These two actions, in my opinion, once again solidified the tight bonds that Vice has, brothers and sisters through thick and thin. And just like you, Tim, I like the Castillo crab walk in the prison yard. Definitely
classic. That's a good way to put it. Crab walk. It was classic.
Okay, let's take a look at the music showing up. First up, we've got Listen Like Thieves by INXS. the opening sequence in the bar. Walk This Way by Run DMC / Aerosmith at the Izzy's Strip Club. Well, not really Izzy's, but the club he was at. Great song. Definitely defined the mid-80s. Gear Jammer by George Thorogood and the Destroyers. That's when Tubbs gets arrested while speeding. In Dolce Decorum by The Damned. That's when Tubbs was taken to jail, and the end sequence where Castillo is getting Tubbs out of jail.
We did have some obvious Jan Hammer music that was blended in the episode, but no credit was given specifically. And now we're on to our group's fun facts and locations. Our first location is Club Oval, 1450 Collins Avenue, Miami Beach. The opening scene where you have the Laura love scenes between Tubbs, the pink Amani meet, and also when Switek and Zito were meeting Izzy at the male strip show. So that location was used several times. It got a lot of mileage out of it.
Our first goof here, when Switek breaks up the mob beating Fox to death, he somehow fires three shots in rapid succession from a pump action shotgun.
Mark, a fun fact is this episode marks the debut of the new stripped down bug van.
Yeah, it didn't have anything on top, I don't think, just plain old van. Another fun fact, Tubbs is apparently Catholic, as he crosses himself upon seeing that Laura is dead. And I've got another goof in the chase scene when they're chasing Tubbs under the bridge there. And when towards the end of the like the final seconds of the chase, it's obvious there's a cameraman in the left-hand squad car. And when all the cars come to a stop, you could see the cameraman in the passenger's front seat.
All right, let's go over the trivia portion of this episode. Last episode, we asked, when Frank calls Morales from a phone booth, what is the name of the business that can be seen in the background? The answer, the Biscayne Bar and Grill.
And this show's trivia question is, in the strip club with Izzy, how much money does he say he makes? And what musician's name does he isify? You could post your answers on this episode's Facebook post or email us at miamivice@duck.com.
We have now arrived at Snerd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little in both the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large. We encounter many challenges we work to overcome. In the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and on our social media, we would like to offer you some parting thoughts, a simple quote, phrase, or words of encouragement, or a funny quip to you, our listeners, because without you, our friends, we'd just be talking ourselves. And we say friends because that's what we consider all of you who follow our show and social media. June is designated as National PTSD Awareness Month, so this episode's quote is, healing from trauma can also mean strength and joy. The goal of healing is not a papering over of changes in an effort to preserve or present things as normal. It is to acknowledge and wear your new life, warts, wisdom, and all, with courage. Catherine Woods. We encourage everyone listening to be a positive force, not only in your life, but others as well. It's contagious and can make our world a better place.
And before we wrap up here, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Aaron from the Manic Movie Monday podcast. I think it's only available on Spotify so far, I think. This is a podcast about, I think, just obscure and other movies that really haven't been shown that much love. She gave us a shout out a while back, and I listened recently to their Porky's trilogy, I guess they had review, and their Jaws 3D review. Absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome. There's a lot of other ones in there, but they do a good job. Erin and her co-creator. So give her a listen. Manic Movie Monday podcast. And that's a wrap for today's episode, people. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to the podcast. And also follow us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes and fun content. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Miami Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us. And if you got a spare moment, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a rating and a review on those channels. This helps us reach more listeners and continue producing great content. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. So we'll catch you next time on the Vice of Miami Podcast on show number 54, covering episode 5, The Good Collar. Now,
good luck, pal.